Question from Vrajinath Simha Prabhu. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Mahabharata, Ashwamedha Parva, section 16, Anugita Parva, Mahabharata 14.16.431, when Arjuna asks Krishna, please again tell me the knowledge of Gita which you have spoken in the battlefield, because I have forgotten that. In reply to Arjuna's question, Lord Krishna said, even I have also forgotten that knowledge. I can't tell you because at that time I was in yoga, but now I can't. Now the question is, how can Krishna, who is Lord himself, forget the Gita? Answer: there is a hierarchy in the scriptural statements, and if we don't understand this hierarchy, we will get misled by apparent contradictions within the scriptures. So there is Nirnayaka and Nirnayatara. Nirnayaka means that which is deciding, and Nirnayatara is that which is to be decided. And this hierarchy helps us to reconcile statements which otherwise seem contradictory. For example, even in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is Amala Purana, which is the purest of all the Puranas, which is established by Jiva Goswami in the Tattva Sandarbha as the highest of all the Vedic authorities, Sarva Pramana Chakravarti Bhutam. He says this is the emperor of all Pramanas. But even in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have in the Govardhan Leela, which is described from chapters 24 to 27 in the 10th canto, in chapter 24, Lord Krishna speaks Karma Mamsa. He says, actually our karma is supreme, and if we do our prescribed duty of farming the land and caring for the cows, then Indra is obliged to give rains to us. Therefore, there is no need for us to worship Indra. And now if we look at the full past, that full narration of Krishna, he doesn't refute Karma Mimamsa at all over there. So, is Karma Mimamsa the idea that karma is supreme and the devatas are also devatas and ultimately the Supreme Lord, they are just meant to give us the results of karma, that they cannot go beyond karma? No, that's not the case. Actually, this is spoken by Krishna in a particular context to incite Indra. So here you have an example of Krishna himself, God himself speaking. And even what God has spoken is to be seen from the broader perspective of what is the conclusion of the scriptures. And that's why even Krishna's words, every Acharya, every Vaishnava Acharya that is commented, he has said that is Krishna speaking it, but Krishna is speaking it for the sake of Leela over here. And that's why it's not considered to be the absolute truth. So just as that is a pastime for enhancing a particular rasa, that rasa is creating anger within Indra and then frustrating him and freeing him from the pride. So similarly, in the Mahabharata is not the Nirnayak scripture, it is the Nirnayatara scripture. It is the scripture that is to be decided from the perspective of the Bhagavatam. Now, Arjuna is saying in the Ashwamedha Parva that I forgot the Gita. But we have in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam incidents which are described much after the Ashwamedha Parva. The Ashwamedha Parva is something where the coronation of after the coronation of Maharaj Yudhishthira, they have the fires, yajnas performed. But after that, there is the departure of Dhritarashtra and all that happens, and then what is described in the chapters 15 and 16 of the first canto, there Arjuna says, I remember the Bhagavad Gita. Ruttapopshamanicha. He says that these are the words of Krishna that I am remembering, and they are now freeing me from my anxiety, and I am very grateful for having been given these nectarian instructions by Krishna. And by remembering that Krishna has departed from the world, and Arjuna naturally is feeling very distressed, devastated in fact. But by remembering those words, he is able to free himself from the anxiety. So similarly, Arjuna is remembering, and similarly, in the Uddhava Gita, which comes from the approximately 7th to the 30th chapters of the 11th canto, elaborate philosophical discussion. There, when Uddhava asks about three modes, Krishna refers. Yes, and I have spoken about this to Arjuna. Basically, there is reference to the Bhagavad Gita in the Uddhava Gita. And Krishna clearly recollects, and he says, now I will speak more to you. Vishnu Acharya Thakur elaborates this even more in his purports about how Krishna is elaborating the Bhagavad Gita and the Uddhava Gita. So Krishna is clearly aware of the Bhagavad Gita and he is speaking the Uddhava Gita over there. So here, now even the Uddhava Gita is spoken, that is the last instruction that Krishna gives before he departs from the world. So that is also after the Ashwamedha Parva. So therefore, from these two references in the Bhagavatam, we have clear understanding that Krishna and Arjuna both recollect the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita. Then what does this Mahabharata pastime talk about? See, every scripture has a particular focus and a particular mood. So, in the Mahabharata, the focus is on Karmakanda primarily. It is not necessarily on pure devotional service. So, even if we look at Arjuna, Arjuna's role in the Mahabharata is more as a Kshatriya and not so much as a devotee. Certainly, he is a devotee, but the pure, one-pointed, intense devotee, as he is, as we can see him in the Bhagavatam, we don't see him in the Mahabharata. So, I have talked about this in my answer to the questions about Bhishma Pitama, how there are different perspectives to each situation from the Mahabharata and the Bhagavatam. Both are true, but the difference is that one is seeing things from a particular perspective and another is seeing from another perspective. One is focusing on showing us from the Karmakanda perspective and the other is from the Bhakti perspective. So in the Karmakanda perspective, there is, the Madhvacharya especially describes this in his Vishnu Tattva Vinirnaya, there is the concept of Asura Mohana. That means the Lord performs certain activities to delude the atheists. Now Krishna doesn't want to delude anyone per se, but when there are demoniac people who want to stay in their demoniac misconceptions and who don't want to surrender to the Lord. So when the Lord appears, he gives everyone the opportunity to surrender. But if some people want to stay deluded, then Krishna allows them to stay deluded. And he does certain actions which make people feel that, make these demoniac people feel, see, even Krishna is deluded only. So there are examples in the Krishna book also, and the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Shalva apparently kills Krishna's father Vasudev, at that time Krishna gets bewildered and he becomes overwhelmed by emotions and he seems to be crying, but then after that he immediately recovers and he understands this is an illusion and he gets over the illusion. So the Acharya described that there is no possibility that Krishna can forget, but Krishna can be misled by illusion, but here Krishna is just enhancing the rasa of the pastime. So similarly, this whole concept at the start of the Anugita, where Krishna is telling Arjuna that I have forgotten the Gita. Now there is no explicit statement that I was in yoga, that's what I was remembering it. If you look at the Mahabharata original Sanskrit, what essentially says, it is not possible for me to recollect it right now. So now what does that mean when Krishna is saying? That is basically Asura Mohan. But then subsequently, if you look at the content of the Anugita, much of the broad philosophical teachings are more or less compatible with what is given in the Bhagavad Gita. So essentially, these sort of statements are to be seen as Asura Mohan. They are meant to delude the atheists, and not just Krishna, and not just that, they have to be seen that these are not in the Nirnayak scripture, they are in the Nirnayatara scripture. And so, when Krishna is describing that I never forget Bahuni me vititani janmani tava Arjuna, Vedaham Samaditani in 7.26 he describes he doesn't forget anything. In 4.5 he describes that I remember all my past lives. So these are philosophical statements that Krishna is making. And within certain pastimes, to evoke certain rasas, Krishna may speak certain things. And that is obvious for the sake of rasa. So for the devotees, it increases the rasa in a different way. And for the demons, it has a different effect. Draupadi saw blood coming out of Krishna's body when the knife had slipped and fallen on his finger, and she had brought it. What was the effect on her? She immediately ripped a part of her silk sari and applied a bandage to Krishna's finger. And she did not think, oh, Krishna's body is transcendental, how can blood come out? Maybe Krishna is not God. No, at that level, Krishna is just dealing with her out of affection. And whatever will evoke that affection, Krishna does that. And then Krishna smiled at her and so told her, because of your loving service, I will reward you. And then he rewarded her by keeping her, giving her unlimited sari when she was being disrobed. So now, for the devotee, when such a devotee sees blood, what happens is, the devotee's love for Krishna increases. But the demon, he will start thinking that, oh, this indicates that Krishna's body is material, which is a misconception. So therefore, as devotees, we see that Krishna is just doing this leela so that he can give more knowledge to us, more variegated knowledge to us. And not variegated in terms of different speculative ideas, but more expanded understandings at multiple levels of the knowledge that he has given in the Bhagavad Gita. So, that's why there is no need to get confused by such statements. When we see them in the other scriptures, we should see all statements in all scriptures from the perspective of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's why, because there is a possibility of such sort of confusion happening, that's why Narad Muni tells Vyasadeva in the first canto, chapters 4 and 5, that actually jugupsitam mahadvyatikrama, that what you have done is, jugupsitam is a very strong word, it means abominable, and mahadvyatikrama is a great mistake. This is, by giving all these scriptures you have committed a great mistake, because this will bewilder people. And Swabhava Raktasya, he says, that people are attached to their own conceptions, and they will use your words to stay attached to their own conception, to justify their own conceptions. So then, of course, while speaking this, Narada is also very respectful. When he says, you are Bhavan, Bhavan is a very respectful address, and he says, you are Amsha Amsha, you are actually you are a manifestation of the Supreme Lord Himself. He is a literary incarnation of the Supreme Lord. So please then, Samadhinanusmara, go into Samadhi and speak and meditate on the Absolute Truth and give the pure knowledge of the Absolute Truth. So Vyasadeva's intention is also compassionate. So people who cannot get elevated immediately, they should have some method for elevation. And the Bhagavatam and the scriptures provide them the method for elevation like that. But those are transitional methods. If they are seen as conclusive or terminal, then that leads to misunderstanding. Jiva Goswami gives an example in his Bhagavad Sandarbhas. He says, sometimes in the Puranas there may be statements, in the Tamasic Puranas, just see the power of the law of karma, by which, because of which Lord Shiva has to wander like a beggar in crematoriums, and because of which Lord Vishnu has to take 10 incarnations and suffer in material existence. Now Jiva Goswami says that actually Lord Vishnu never suffers in material existence. He is performing Leela. And even Lord Shiva's coming, Lord Shiva is a very exalted personality. It is not that he has to suffer in a crematorium because of the law of karma. He is Bhutanath out of his compassion for Lord Shiva, for the people who are in Tamoguna, Lord Shiva takes on that garb. So Jiva Goswami explains that these sort of statements are given to create respect for the law of karma among those who think that by their contacts, by their influence, by their power, they can just circumvent the law of karma. says, no. Even Vishnu and Krishna and Shiva are under karma. How can you escape karma? Respect karma and follow karma. If you don't follow karma, you will suffer. But then, as one understands, one advances further, then one will understand that actually the purpose of that rule is not to say that Shiva and Vishnu are under karma, but to create respect for karma so that people follow. And then, as one advances to a higher level in scriptural understanding, one will become free from that notion and will understand that Krishna is beyond karma. So this is the multi-level process and progression that is there within the Vedic scriptures. And that's why we need to study and understand the Vedic scriptures under guidance. If we don't, then we will get totally confused and bewildered sometimes. We sometimes give the example that the Bible and the Quran are like a pocket dictionary and the Vedic scriptures are like the unabridged dictionary. So, and we may use this to say, yes, the Vedic scriptures are so great. And we may use this to sort of boost our own false ego. But actually, if we are given an unabridged dictionary, it can be very difficult to use it if we are not trained in the use of English. Now, for example, in English, the same word can have contradictory meanings. The word moot can mean debatable and it can mean settled. Moot point means the point which is to be debated, and moot point is that point which has been settled. Now, what is the meaning of that word? If the dictionary is going to give us both meanings, then the person who is reading who is actually reading the book and reading the dictionary has to have an adequate understanding of English language to see the context of what is being spoken and then understand what is the meaning of the word that is relevant over here. Is this a debatable issue or is this a non-debatable issue? The same word has two distinct meanings. So like that, if we just go to the Vedic scriptures, then we will see so many statements which seem to be contradictory. One statement is here, one statement is there. So unless we have a broad context of the Vedic scriptures clear, we are like experienced readers, then then only we will be able to understand what is where and what is the implication of what. So for us, the Vedic scriptures are like the unabridged dictionary, but when we are in the neophyte stage, just trying to learn the language of scripture, not language in terms of Sanskrit language, but the language as a metaphor for talking about the subject. When we are trying to just understand the scriptural teaching, at this stage, we need pocketbooks. And what Srila Prabhupada has given us is like a pocketbook. Pocketbook means he has given us very clear, conclusive understanding. It's not limited in the sense that it's not that the knowledge that is given is preliminary, it is lofty. So it is like a pocket dictionary in the sense that it is more accessible, more clear, more unambiguous for us. That's why first we need to become well-rooted in Prabhupada's books, and then we can go and read other books, even within the Vedic library. If we just start reading other Vedic books beforehand, then we will get confusion like this. Thank you.